Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. Doing well. As we enter the offseason here, this should be an exciting offseason for sure. Disappointing season. Most disappointing regular season in team history, in my opinion. But I am excited for a new era. I feel reinvigorated after the change, and I feel encouraged by the tone, especially of Steve Bisciotti's letter to the fans, reemphasizing commitment to winning championships.
This was the note he put out after Harbaugh's firing, thanking him for yes. Okay, so there hasn't been a second one, is my point.
Right, not yet.
It probably is important to say, and people may know, and they may not have heard yet, that Harbaugh and Steve Bisciotti will have a press conference on Tuesday of next week, on the 13th. EDC and Bisciotti, yes. Oh man, it's going to be a hard habit to break. Believe me,
that'd be a little awkward.
Yeah. So the Harbaugh firing, obviously a very big move, a pivotal moment. It always is in team history when you switch coaches, and there's a lot more risk, I think, on the downside of this one, that because the amount that the Ravens can gain in terms of where the franchise is or what could happen to the franchise is not that much. But at some point you take some pain and you move on. I guess it was going to have to happen at some point here. Lots of movement on potential interviews. Now I have a partial list. At least I'm not sure if there's been any added in the last hour or so.
There has been one. If I could just give my thoughts quickly on Bisciotti's decision, bold move for sure. I think Harbaugh was souring a little bit with some of the players. A couple of them did not give him a vote of confidence or give him the opportunity post game, and with the fans as well. But really, it's the results on the field and the postseason disappointments and a underwhelming regular season this year. So, he's a great coach. Obviously, 18 years, that's a long time to be a coach anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I do think it was time for the move.
Now, the longest tenured Baltimore team leader in history, more than Earl Weaver, even. It was for 68 to 82, was 15 years, but he also came back. And even if you add that, he doesn't add up to the Harbaugh era. I think he had parts of 17 seasons he was with the Ravens in total. So point people to the podcast that Jonah Schaefer and I did on the firing. I think I agree with you in terms of there were people in the locker room that certainly are on the wrong side of the fence for Harbaugh, and Isaiah likely might have been one of them based on things we've heard about. Not sure that matters right at this point because it's not clear that he's going to be re-signed. But what seemed to be the bigger factor was the fact that he wasn't willing to part ways with Todd Monken, and Lamar was very much on the opposite side from Monken, not from Harbaugh, but from Monken.
So I personally don't buy that at all, that one. There's been some conflicting reports. Rappaport says one thing. Schefter says something else. The Lamar Jackson Entertainment Twitter handle, apparently run by somebody from Lamar, has been directly refuting that there was conflict between Monken and Harbaugh. I'm sorry, Monken and Lamar. And that's not how Steve Bisciotti's always done business, right? He doesn't tell you who to hire and who to fire. Mm-hmm. He probably said, Harbaugh, what's your plan to get this team to the Super Bowl? And he wasn't satisfied with the plan. I really don't buy that one, especially with all the contentious acrimony between Monken and Harbaugh in the season. If they said it was or, maybe I would buy it. But I just – the national reporting the last week or two surrounding the Ravens has been not trustworthy in my view.
That was something we discussed is why is this the case now, when in season it certainly seemed as if Monken and Harbaugh were the ones who kind of had a little bit of backbiting going on. Jonah Schaefer's point was that he thinks that Harbaugh's relationship with Monken was better because he knew he could take that kind of stuff. He knew he was tough enough to take it, and that was a reason why he's willing to do it. But it was part of what Harbaugh wanted to do, is run it back with the same people. And if you say that's the reason why Bisciotti was not satisfied with the plan, I'll buy that. And I do agree with you. Bisciotti is not the kind of guy to reach down to the organization, pull wires, and start giving orders to, you know, somebody two levels down. The last thing he did.
We'll never know. I mean, there's been rumors that Bisciotti was the one that said hire Gary Kubiak or something of the sort. You know, we'll never know the details, but I don't buy that he was wanting to hang on to Monken. That would be the reason. Why would Bisciotti even be that upset with Monken? The offense performed much better than the defense. That one just doesn't add up to me.
I think the risk on the Monken thing would be that if he thinks he's going to lose his franchise quarterback over a decision to keep Monken that he has no particular stake in or doesn't like, then that's the reason. I mean, if Lamar Jackson is really the Ravens brand, then that's the reason. So anyway, we'll leave it at that. There have been lots of movement on potential interviews, and let's go through those. We've got Matt Nagy, age 47 now, coming in, former Bears head coach from 2018 to 21. Any thoughts on him? We can maybe go one at a time.
He's a meh to me. You know, he had a failed chance. He's kind of been a Andy Reid merchant more than his own doing, in my view.
Okay, Anthony Weaver, the Dolphins defensive coordinator, certainly has Ravens connections. He is of the group that's out there right now. He is the one who could replace Harbaugh as a CEO head coach. There's not another in this group who really makes sense for that position. Outstanding leader of men. If you've ever seen him on the field working with the defensive line, he's unbelievable. Has tremendous rapport with the players. He'll sit there and the coach, the defensive line coach, or even a coaching intern of some sort will often be wearing these huge padded arms when they do rip drills. And he's done them before. And I've seen him do them with no padding at all. He's always trying to prove something when he does that. But
I remember you mentioning that. Let me set the table real quick if I can. First of all, I want to say I have a lot of trust that Steve Bisciotti is going to knock this hire out of the park. He found Harbaugh from obscurity and he lasted 18 years. If that's not a good track record, I don't know what is. They were going to cast a very wide net. Last time around, they interviewed, I believe, 14 candidates, and it took them 3 weeks to make a decision. So I think wide net. And you have a note here, philosophically, CEO versus, one side of the ball. I am firmly on the one side of the ball with this decision. I think there's more value to be harvested from a play caller or someone that has a unique, innovative scheme, a tactician who can get away with not having – perfect puzzle pieces where you have the perfect OC and DC and you have talent all across the roster. There's some of these candidates that have elevated their side of the ball with lesser talent. So that's kind of where I am there. And I also think the culture is well established. You don't need someone to come in and change the culture necessarily. So if you're given the choice between one side of the ball versus CEO, I'm one side of the ball.
Okay. And I would make a case for the other side. I lean slightly in that direction, though I admit, for the right guy, if you have the best ever offensive or defensive coordinator and you want to give him the head coaching reins, I understand why you would do that. But the reasons otherwise why I think it's a good thing. First of all, it gives you oversight for both sides that is above the level of that coordinator. So you don't have a dictatorial coordinator who runs amok and you have a problem. Because if your head coach is that, you have to get rid of the head coach. And that is the other part is, you want to be in a position where you don't have to get rid of a successful head coach because they're doing a bad job as a coordinator. All right. And you can't, it's very difficult to remove such a person who is the head coach, but is really calling the defense. Very, very difficult to reduce that guy's sphere of influence. And you'd have to actually do what Steve Bisciotti just mentioned. He doesn't ever want to do, which is reach down to the organization and say, hey, look, figure out if you want to be a CEO head coach or you want to run the defensive side of the ball here, for example. I got one more thing to say about that was, I mentioned the oversight actually already in terms of you have an extra person overseeing that, but you also have a person who's responsible for culture exclusively or has a greater responsibility for figuring out how do I bring in other people who don't necessarily fit exactly within a typical coaching structure, and I can make them be useful to the organization in a specific role. And Dean Pees may or may not have had a big hand in turning around the 24 Ravens defense, but it was an innovative idea. I think that, the use of Pagano in 25 was certainly less successful in terms of what's going on. Just, you know, we looked at, but there are opportunities to do that. And then you also have a head coach who does all of the things that you otherwise need players to be concerned about. That's his job to handle that direction. While the offensive defensive coordinator have much more specific roles in terms of how they're directing activity. I think that could be, it could potentially be more overwhelming for that person who has responsibility on one side of the ball to also manage all the inches that are out there. You know, if we go to any given Sunday, that head coach can give you.
Yeah, I think you make good points. I certainly see that perspective. If you want a dynasty or a long-term head coach, you know, to me, you're really looking for the next Sean McVay or the Mike McDonald. And those guys are, because their scheme is so innovative and advanced, and I think maybe being a little bit better tactically helps you at the highest levels, win at the highest levels. And then when you have a coordinator that's like a McDonald, that's, you know, exceptional, he moves on. So I'd rather at least have one side of the ball stable and continuous if you could. But just back to Weaver, he'd be a fine choice. I definitely agree with your comment about being, you know, a leader of men and that sort of thing. And there are cultural things I think that could be improved, whether it's poise under pressure and just having a more of a killer instinct. So if that's something he can bring, I'd be excited. I do think some of the other candidates are more exciting to me, but he's a fine choice as well.
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about analytics in this group at all, and maybe we will as we go forward. I do think that's something that should come up in the interview process. You mentioned the wide net. The thing I want more than anything about this interview process is that it's open to the public. And we've already seen some indications that that might be true. They talked about, they already had a first round of Zoom interview with one candidate. I think it's Vance Joseph already they talked to.
Yep.
And they're going to go through a series of Zoom interviews. Then they're going to have some in-person interviews after that. I don't know if they're going to really be able to get some of these people for in-person interviews who are still in the playoffs, for example. But they'll get some of the people in the building to do that. This thing has to be wrapped up in short order. I mean, there is no off season. I mean, already, you know, things should be working on. For example, what to tell your players about what they need to in the off season. In a lot of cases, your opportunity to do that was on locker cleanout day.
Right.
So you've already missed some of that time, but it needs to be handled quickly. And I hope, and I still have not been able to find the great thing they sent out after the Harbaugh hiring. Everybody's asking me for that, by the way. Everybody wants a copy of it.
The handbook, you said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of what they did in the last hiring. I hope the Ravens will produce it before this, but I hope more than that, I hope they produce another one. You know, to tell us what they're doing.
The fact that Bisciotti is going to stand and take questions from the press, next Tuesday after not doing so in
time.
About 8 years, I think that does indicate they're approaching this with the idea of transparency.
Right. Okay. All right. Outstanding. So let's go through some of the other people. Brian Flores, the Vikings DC. The big thing he has is the lawsuit pending against the league. He claimed discrimination. They're now hung up on whether that's going to be go to the courts or whether Goodell under the arbitration clause has the right to rule on it directly. So there is a question about how that's going to end up being handled. I think they were going to take it to the Supreme Court to have that decision made on whether or not it would be heard in the courts or heard under or it would be Goodell's purview to make that call. So that's an interesting one, and it's a it is a big, big, big question mark for Flores. And in particular, because Flores's behavior has been questioned since he left the Dolphins in two places. So while I think he's a great defensive mind, I have real questions about his ability to be the leader of the team.
Schematically, I like what he brings to the table, but I agree with you personality wise and organizational wise. That's, you know, we're not going to know what happens in the room with these guys when they're having these second, third round. And you have to kind of just trust that they're picking the right guy at that point. Next one up is Davis Webb, Broncos QB coach, who I believe is also, maybe he's this afternoon.
Past
I think
they were coordinator.
They were going to knock both of the Denver guys out today, I believe, because they have the bye. So if you have the bye, you can be interviewed this week. If you don't, you have to wait.
That happened, I think, with Monken after the 23 season. He had a head coaching interview or so. So same thing. So Davis Webb is an interesting candidate. Obviously, offensive side. He wouldn't be looking for a lateral move. Although, you know, moving from Bo Nix to Lamar Jackson is not a lateral move. I think I would make that argument. Clint Kubiak, of the Seahawks offensive coordinator, one of the biggest names, and certainly is looking for a head coaching gig at this point. Anything to say about him?
I like Kubiak a lot. I'm not completely sold that the wide zone West Coast style is perfect for Lamar, but maybe it is. But if you had your choice, I would prefer offensive side. I'm not opposed to defensive side, but if it was what would be the perfect solution, because it's an offensive league and you have an MVP quarterback. So I'm very intrigued by Kubiak.
You may not have that coach for the rest of your career. I think it's something for the rest of Lamar's career. So I think it is something you need to consider. And you know, who can really plan on having a coach for 10 years or 8 years from the current point? I mean, you can't ever really plan on that, but you want to give yourself the best chance for a dynasty. And I think as soon as you tie him directly to the quarterback, I mean, one thing that we really noticed with Flacco's career is things moved on. He had more and more friction with his offensive coordinators. He thought he knew how to do things and he didn't really want to be told. And Cam Cameron in particular just couldn't get along with. Right. There were others, but Cam Cameron was a problem. Other guys were more like tofu in dealing with him. And the only guy I think who ever really got through to him in a way, and maybe I'm forgetting somebody, but it's Kubiak is the one
That's
guy.
That's what who, I was going to say. Yeah, his he father, right.
Yeah. So, yeah. He brought, he had, a renaissance in his career in 2014, where the Ravens were very close to winning the Super Bowl. Had they been able to get by that game in New England, they right. blew a pair of 14 point leads.
Yep. Okay. So next up is Vance Joseph, who has concluded his interview, or his first mm-hmm. round, I should say. Ken, do you have a preference as far as a retread head coach versus first timer?
Not specifically, okay, but there are people that I don't think are worthy of a second chance. And so I don't want to get Bill Belichick here at age 73. Yeah. I don't think that makes any sense. But we've got a question about that, by the way, about someone who really makes a strong case for Bill Belichick. And I want to give it to somebody we respect on the show, and I want to give it its due. But, there are people I think are worthy of a second chance. And, we'd have to go through that. I think most of the guys that I'm interested, it would be their first shot. So Flores,
I think I agree.
Yeah, Flores is not really my guy. I think if Flores were to come here as the defensive coordinator, I think that'd be one thing. Some people are talking about wanting Mike McDaniel and he might be. I don't really want him as the head coach. I'd love him as the offensive coordinator, but I think he's there's something about him that's always kind of set DJ, me off in the wrong direction.
He dresses like a DJ. Maybe that's it. So they call him DJ Mikey Mack. Yeah, he seems a little immature. I agree with that.
Okay. So we've got that. And, he's certainly young enough. I do think the Ravens should be looking in the age range, which allows for dynasty coaches, which really means like 37 to 50, no older than 50. Mm-hmm. If you hire a 55-year-old at this point, I think it's really questionable. I'm thinking I don't actually know how old Anthony Weaver is, but he's
I think he's about my age,
about 45, right? Because he was drafted in 2002. Yeah, I'll look it up too while we're doing it here because it's he only played for 7 years. Yeah, he's 45 and 133.
45,
days.
You got it.
Yeah.
One other coach that was requested to interview that just broke about an hour ago as we record here about 4 o'clock on Thursday, Robert Saleh. They requested an interview with him. He failed with the Jets. I'm not sure. He's a little too rah-rah for my taste personally, but who knows?
I mean, if he is a guy who is a second possibility to be a CEO head coach. Now, I heard about that, and I'm not really that excited about it, frankly. He's a little bit older still. He's 47 or will be later this month. That's kind of towards the upper end of where I'd want. I think if you hired him, it better be as a CEO head coach, and he better be able to not meddle with whoever the defensive coordinator they get is. And that's going to be a very tough ask, but he didn't call the plays for the Jets apparently, before they fired the defensive coordinator.
Well, he's calling the plays in San Fran now. He went back to San Fran and is doing it again.
No, I'm hearing you.
I'm saying,
Jets' head coach. Yeah,
I think there's kind of how should I explain this? There's some head coaches that have experience on one side of the ball that don't call the plays, but it's still their scheme and their systems.
Like Tomlin.
A lot of guys. And then some guys have a play sheet, you know, McDonald and McVay are calling the plays. So go ahead.
This is a really important point, too, about why I prefer the CEO coach model is that coaches will talk about wanting to have their focus on the field. Now, in theory, you could have a defensive quality control coach on the sideline if you were a head coach / DC. And that guy could be going and breathing fire. And I think that I've seen Belichick do that sort of thing, but Belichick always had a defensive coordinator. The game in Lamar's second year, his MVP year, when they went and they beat the 8-0 Patriots, the Ravens got up 14-0 in that game. Belichick was over on the sideline, breathing fire at that defense, trying to get them, you know, stimulated back into the game. There's too much now going on in an NFL game with regard to fourth down decision making, all of the other things that go on with game management strategy and whatnot for a coach to be worried about that. So if you're going to have a guy who's head coach / DC, he needs to have a very strong number two. It's kind of like a get back guy. You've heard of those guys on the sidelines who their job is literally to keep people off the white paint so you avoid penalties that way. And, you know, people talk about, I got the best get back guy in the league, you know, kind of thing.
Right. All right, a couple more guys that have been fired, and then I think we should touch on a few coordinators that are playing this round and may still be on the Ravens' radar. Well, let me just ask you, Kevin Stefanski, would you give him an interview?
Unexcited.
Unexcited. Okay.
Yeah, I would give an interview, maybe. Stefanski, I think he's another one who retook over offensive play calling duties at some point. So. He would not be my guy. If the Ravens really love him for some reason, you know, he's been 2-time head coach of the year. Then, you know, maybe. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm on the fence. I mean, I wouldn't hate it, but he's not, you know, getting me super excited or somebody that's at the top of my list. I do like the younger guys. I will say, Mike McDaniel was fired today. Creating eighth opening. If you pair him, in my view, if you can pair him with a defensive-minded head coach and he's the offensive coordinator, that could be a dynamite.
I'd be in favor of him for OC, no doubt about it. But the problem is he's gonna have so much demand for OC that you'll never get him as that. Somebody will make him the head coach, and that's the problem. Okay. I've got a current list of odds. Do you want me to go down through this list and then we can throw it out? Because these seem ridiculous. This came from DraftKings. There's a lot of dumb money betting is all I can say. Kevin Stefanski is the top candidate, plus 350. Then Minter, plus 350. We've talked about those guys. Minter, did you have anything else to add about him?
Yeah, I was going to list. There's six more assistants that I like to mention. But let's go through the list first.
Okay, so Minter obviously still in play with the Chargers as their defensive coordinator. Michigan ties, lots of reasons why he'd be the guy. Brian Flores at plus 450. Todd Monken at plus 450. I mean, there's no way Todd Monken is plus 450. This is ridiculous. Monken is like a 1% chance to be the head coach here in this city. Probably zero, actually.
1%.
Is this from a year ago or something? I'm looking at this list. No, it's January 7th, 2026. This is DraftKings. Whoever's helping create this line with their wagers, you're doing yourself no favors. That's all I can
say. Let's find the guy with the plus 2,000 odds and bet the mortgage on it.
Yeah. Matt Nagy plus 2,000 be a good bet. But the rest of Mike McCarthy is plus 500. Don't see that happening.
No.
Clint Kubiak plus 500. Chris Shula. Now, there's a name
that
is a particularly good. Your thoughts on Shula?
Yeah, so Minter and Shula both fall in the same boat for me. They're both really good schematic wizards on the defensive side of the ball. And I heard earlier this morning that the Chargers spent the 31st most on defense and the Rams spent the 32nd most on defense, and they're still getting good results. So to me, that's where kind of the value comes in. If you hire a guy and you don't need to have, you know, high-priced players littered across your depth chart if you have a guy that can do more with less.
The thing that needs to go with that always, and you know, we've had that happen in Ravens history. They were last in spending in 2019 on offense, and they had by far the best offense in the game. But the thing that needs to go that is draft capital expended. And so there needs to be a recent draft capital kind of grade off.
They only have one first rounder. The only first rounder on the Rams defense is Jared Verse. I looked at their depth chart yesterday. They got a couple second rounders, a couple third rounders, but they don't have a whole lot there. Now, the Chargers have a little bit more. They spent a first on Tui Lopu. Obviously, Derwin was a former first. Khalil Mack was a first. But still, both those guys are pretty exciting to me. If you compare them with a hotshot type of offensive coordinator, I think that might be really the best of both worlds.
Okay. Well, he's one of the guys who went through the Michigan internship program, so to speak, and he'd be an exciting pick. Actually, that's Minter, not Shula, but after Shula, Cliff Kingsbury. There's a name a lot of people seem to like. I'm not saying he's radioactive or anything. I'd love to see how the Ravens interview him and what they like about him, but I don't see a reason to hire him.
Yeah, he's not too exciting to me.
Okay. Joe Brady, Buffalo offensive coordinator, any interest?
Yes, I would be interested in Brady. I think he has the RPO vertical Air Coryell combination that could work with Lamar pretty well. Obviously, it worked pretty well with Josh Allen. It has. So, he would be on my interview list. He would.
Okay. We've got Jeff Harley is next.
Heffley. Yep. He's another.
Heffley.
Yep. He is a cast a wide net. Bring him in. Maybe he lights up the room and commands the room. I'm interested in him. He's not at the top, but interesting.
This is really interesting because I'm looking at the DraftKings list. It is actually listed as Jeff Harley and not Jeff Halfley. And it's only plus 700. So I wonder who's betting on that. But it's obviously the guy who wrote this article who got it wrong. Jeff Harley, the actual Jeff Harley is a U.S. general. There's a Rear Admiral Jeff Harley. And there's a Jeff Harley who's a dedicated musically artistic flutist.
So if you bet on Jeff Harley and they hire Jeff Halfley, do they pay you out or not?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Probably not. Okay.
Robert Saleh is plus 1,000 here, which I would think now he would be higher than that. Vance Joseph plus 1,300. The fact that he's been interviewed means he's probably a better chance than that. Michael Fleur plus 5,000. Yep. Where are you on him?
I like him. He's okay. I mean, you know, he failed with the Jets, right? He was Saleh's OC, I believe. But he has worked under Shanahan. He has worked under McVay. I mean, you got to get him in the room and see how his presence. But as far as schematically, he could be interested. Here's another one. There's a rumor that if the Packers lose this week, his brother may become available.
Yeah.
Now he would probably be maybe like a home run type pick. He has a top five or eight winning percentage since he's become head coach.
He would be immediately one of the most sought after head coaching candidates, and somebody would pay him a lot of money. I'm not convinced he'd be necessarily the right guy for the Ravens, but sure, you want to bring him in, that's absolutely fine. There's more people on this list. I think that's about as deep as I want to dive on that. Anybody
Campanile,
else?
Campanile, I'll mention, the Jaguars defensive coordinator. He might be another hot name.
Okay.
Jaguars actually both their coordinators might be kind of under the radar type of guys that could, because really, Liam Cohen turned that around really quick. Mm-hmm. They're playing the ball.
Apparently, somebody made this point. Eric Clark made this point. I want to jump to his question right away. So, if Eric Clark's question was a good one. Do you think the new head coach keeps EDC or does he pull a Cohen? And so basically, Eric, I value the question. I know you know the answer to this here, but there's no way in freaking hell that Steve Bisciotti is going to change this bedrock fundamental system they have of next door silos. I'd probably say they're equal silos. I might even say this is a strong GM system, which is the unusual kind. There are a lot of strong head coach systems out there. That ain't the Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens are a side-by-side system. You know, two guys need to cooperate.
Oh, for sure. I think they'll always have that, the system. I agree with that. That's a foundation. DaCosta, in my view, made five clear mistakes this year. But I don't think he's on the hot seat. He's earned more rope to see what he can do with the next guy. Yeah. But a couple years, if he hasn't turned it around, I mean, Bisciotti's kind of showing that he's getting a little bit impatient. So I wouldn't put it beyond them. But they'll never have – I hope they never have like a Belichick GM head coach combination.
Right.
But I would kind of slightly disagree that it's GM strong. I think it's GM strong until the coach wins the Super Bowl. And then we've seen now two different times, a year after the Super Bowl, the head coach is starting to get some more say over personnel, whether it was Billick going after Gerback and Searcy and spending up, and then Harbaugh, you know, kind of, well, let's contend every season and let's get rid of some of the loud mouths and let's bring in some more, you know, locker room type guys. So they work hand in hand. So, but they have to win the Super Bowl, I think, to kind of get that equal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, to if you go backwards in time, I think the times that Harbaugh has been involved heavily in the draft process are some of my least favorite times. And Amen. I don't want any part of that. You know, I want a head coach who basically gives his input before the draft on scheme. And if you want to say something during the thing, I mean, I frankly much more buy the input of George Warhop on an offensive lineman during the draft than I buy anything from Harbaugh during the draft. And that probably extended to Billick too. Remember Billick's big mistake wasn't. Bowler. Yeah. It's like, it's Kyle Bowler. That's right. Trading back into round one for Bowler. And it is a very difficult question for him to give a full answer to. I've asked him it on one occasion where I said, you know, take me through the drama of that 2003 first round. And it's like, I'm going to give this example. It's a long story for a small payoff, but the Japanese have a war museum in Tokyo that is a shrine to the Book of Souls and all the people who have given their lives to the Meiji emperors. It's the Yakasuni War Shrine in Tokyo. And it's the most egregious rewriting of history you will ever see. You go in there and like, what? This isn't what happened. You know, all of the events that led up to Pearl Harbor, there was these back channel memorandums. The Hull memorandum is somewhat known to US historians anyway, that you know, there was communication of this type, but it's just a complete rewriting of history. And that's kind of the impression I get when I hear Billick talk about that 2003 first round of the draft. It's really funny. Yeah.
To the main point, to put a bow on it, I completely agree with you. Coaches are paid to coach. Scouts are paid to scout. And I think there's maybe five guys we can say that Harbaugh handpicked just through what DaCosta mentioned in post-draft. And I don't think any of the five hit. And Billick's record
was a big one, yeah.
Cleveland, Duvernay, Ben Mason. This year,
like Justice Hill.
Aeneas Peebles, and they didn't play him.
He was Aeneas Peebles?
Yeah.
I had not heard that mapping.
If you go back and watch The Wire, which I did 2 weeks ago, DaCosta says before that, all right, let's give John a pick here. This is John's pick right before they pick Peebles.
Interesting. Okay. Cause there are, that has happened occasionally in the past, and DaCosta has no compunction to basically saying when a pick is not his. And when he was the number two guy, the guy he pointed out was Ozzie's pick and not his. Devon Drew could not stand him. And he said, it's Ozzie's pick. That's all I can say about it.
Yeah. Mid round tight end, right? Yeah.
Fifth round, I think. I mean, it was just, it didn't work out, obviously, but from the moment the draft was over, very first times he met, Drew has never even been an OTA yet. And he's already saying it's Ozzie's pick. So,
They used to say day three is for the scouts. And lately, day three has been for the assistant coaches. So I'd rather give day three back to the scouts.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you there. I think in general, that's the group that should be making those choices. I don't feel like that's really been the case with their fifth and sixth round picks and whatnot. But the Aeneas Peebles pick, I'm actually bothered to hear that was a Harbaugh pick, because obviously he hasn't even been active, and that really is a Harbaugh decision and not an EDC decision in terms
of game day. Could have used a little D line. Could have used a little juice in the fourth quarter last week. Yep,
sure could have. A little Tupo, you're thinking, or a little, some other pick.
Bring Peebles up.
Oh, you're saying Jones, they didn't need him.
The special teams linebacker who missed the tackle in special teams. Yeah, I would have made that swap.
Yeah, well, I would have been. I'm a three on switching out Peebles in terms of my excitement level and switching out Peebles for Jones, but it's non-zero. I have some excitement for it.
Yep.
I'd be about an 8 or 9 on shifting Tupo for him, because I thought that was going to be where the Steelers ended up beating the Ravens, was on the ground and doing that. And it didn't end up being exactly that way, but I still think that the linebackers would have had more effective game, and Roquan was bad had they had better upfront protection in that game.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on Roquan, but I think we're going to save that for the next show. Let's transition now, though, onto, while we're on the topic of defensive line, a couple extensions. John Jenkins was re-upped for 1.83. Does that qualify for the VSB, Ken?
No, he doesn't, because he hasn't been in the Ravens times. For 4 years. Yeah, and so only 172 of that is guaranteed, 170,000. So basically, if he comes to camp and he's gained 30 pounds, which that's a non-zero probability. Okay, that's all I'll say about it. Is he does not have to be retained. We actually went through camp and we were talking about the risk of him not being retained last year, that he might have been cut.
I remember that.
Very well, out of shape.
And they had three.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
The intriguing UDFA nose tackles, three of them. They ended up losing two, and they kept Okoye, the guy, and then two guys that went to Tampa. The guy from Auburn.
Jason Jones.
And then there was one more guy that went.
The guy they brought in
to Tampa.
Well, it was the guy they brought in at the start of OTAs, and he ended up having a tryout instead of the wrestler who ended up having a tryout.
Yeah, I know. There was another one that went to. Anyway, long story short, thoughts on the signing?
Yeah, I'm very excited about the signing. I think it's an excellent high value, cheap signing with real value. And he played very well next to Travis, and he actually gives the team a fair amount of flexibility in terms of moving Travis to the threes. I think it's one of the things they should look to exploit in the draft is their flexibility in drafting one or three and the ability to move Travis to either spot.
Yeah, I like this signing. I've seen some folks upset saying the Ravens are getting too old and trying to link this with the Mark Andrews signing, which is completely unrelated. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good signing. He could still play. He played pretty well this year, played a lot of snaps this year, made a couple splash plays. I mean, for a guy on the vet minimum deal, that's pretty much the best you can look for. And I think on rundowns, he could play the nose with Travis at the three. And then on pass downs, Travis can kick inside, and you have to add a three, and that makes you all the stronger. So I like this one.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And it could be they even pick up another outstanding pass rusher either at nose or three, and that's how they would rebuild the pass rush in a lot of ways, not probably from the edge. I know everybody says, well, you got to have a great edge rusher. And
two-prong solution. That pass rush is pretty rough this year.
They can go with two prongs, and you know, hopefully part of that is also Mike Green develops a little bit more than he had before, and they still need outside linebackers. But if they only had the money to really pay one, I'd probably go inside outside and go the cheap route at outside linebacker again. I know everybody's going to hate that, but that's how I would do it.
Well, you need two outside linebackers and two defensive linemen as the roster shifts today. So I think you're probably going to have a combination of vets and young guys. Probably at both spots.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. The other signing this week was Nick Moore. He has 1 year guaranteed, but it's a 4-year deal. Nick Moore, third year player or whatever he is, I guess actually he's a fourth year player, will be 37 when this contract is over, which is just like, you know, how did this guy get to be 37 already? He's going to be the age of some of the head coaches we're considering by the end of this contract.
Did he go on a Mormon mission or something? Or do we know what the backstory is there?
I don't remember what his backstory is, but long snappers will come into the league occasionally much later. And so they, you know, it could be any number of things, but I don't remember in his case. Yeah. He didn't play for anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I saw conflicting numbers. I saw 2.7 guaranteed and 1.2 signing, which seems a little bit rich, but I'm not going to complain about pennies at this point.
Yeah, it's the first year is guaranteed of salaries. There's 1.2 million of guaranteed money in this year plus his signing bonus. So you're correct about the amount. If you look at
gotcha.
I think it's 240,000 for 4 years guaranteed. And then if you look at OTC, his last guaranteed amount is in there, or maybe they accelerated some of it into 25 to pay the next contract because they had a little bit of money left over. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those two things.
No. Fair enough. He's done a fine job. Hasn't had any bad snaps, so that's what you're looking for. Let's burn through these future signings so we can hit this loaded mailbag.
Flowers year five option. Let's talk about that for a second. So this is a big item. Zay Flowers made the Pro Bowl bump of, tell us, Foss, $4 million or $2 million?
Second. So this is the second time Zay made the Pro Bowl. So he was in line to earn, I believe, 4.24.3 on the fifth-year option. Now that bumps up to $28 million on the fifth-year option. So, you know, I made the point around Pro Bowl time, you know, you don't want to vote for guys for it's not in the best interest of the team. And that's a pretty stiff number. I mean, I don't know if, you know, you'd want to pay that to him on a long-term deal. So there's a decision to make there. And they have to make a decision, I believe, a week before the draft. Is that correct, Ken? Right around there.
It's in that neighborhood. I've always forgotten exactly when it is, whether it's before or after the draft. But in any case, it's, you know, it's 1.2% of the entire cap we're talking about incrementally. I mean, the $28 million is almost 10% of the cap, but the extra $4 million is 1.2% of the cap. So,
yeah. So the fifth year options are obviously beneficial to the team, but not always. So, you know, we saw it with Linderbaum too. So. You know, but then again, coming off a strong year, I do. Yeah. You expect them to pick that up? I do.
I do. He had 10.3 yards per target this year. Most of it was, or a lot of it came from that last game and the remarkable, you know, couple of touchdowns he had and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I would like him. I don't think he needs any more work on his receiving, although, but for sure, polish it up, work with Lamar, you know, be the guy you want to be, but he's wonderful. Incredible, difficult to cover target. I wish he had more on-field awareness, and it's affecting him in two different ways. One is in really not having any game management awareness, which I maybe can live with. I'm not crazy about it, but I maybe can live with it. But now he's been involved in three incidents in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And number two is that he really doesn't have good awareness of who's behind him and the risk of fumbling and whatnot that goes with it. No, the fumbling.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I would also add yards after the catch because he goes backwards more often than you'd like.
But he's among the leaders, I think, in yak anyway. You know, it's interesting. We have to take a look at that. But I thought he was. I thought, you know, at 5.6 or something, he was near the league lead in yak.
Well, while you look for that, I'd just say if the Ravens do go for a Kubiak, you could really see him serving has that Jackson Smith and Jigba role, Zay Flowers, in a Clint Kubiak offense, who's maybe one of the front runners for offensive player of the year this year. Really had a breakout year.
All right, working on yak per reception here very quickly. I'm sorry, I don't want to take that long on this, but he's fifth in the NFL in yak.
Okay.
Yak per reception.
That's great.
I agree. He doesn't look great. He needs a good U-turn move. This thinks he can improve as a receiver. I don't want to be there, but he'll never be I don't think he'll ever be a back shoulder guy. I don't think that will be his thing. I think his big thing he can do is stick his foot in the ground and go like almost no other receiver can corner, which means he doesn't have to be a great route runner. He just needs to be able to do that. Yeah.
Agreed.
Talk about the future signings. The Ravens signed 8 guys from their practice squad to futures deals. Not a lot of really exciting names in this group, and we'll go through them real quickly. The tackle, Jared Christian Lichtenhand. I think he's out of Oregon, if I recall correctly, a guy who big, a little bit soft, unathletic kind of a tackle, but he does have the length, the requisite length you want in size. Other than that, I don't see a lot to like about him. Another, the guard, Jared Penning, who I am still unaware of why he's on the practice squad ahead of somebody like Dellinger, who, I think the Ravens would have really wanted. Obviously, Dellinger wanted to get a better opportunity, and that's why he moved on. But right. But in the case of Penning, it was really strange practice squad signing there. Wide receiver Cornelius Johnson. I really know almost nothing about him, so I won't comment. DT David Olajiga, I believe he's a PPP. Foreigner. Yeah.
Yes.
IPPP, yep. Right, International Pathway Program. And then Oruwariye has been activated a couple times this year. He's an older guy now. I think he might be 29 years old. But
I would say late 20s.
Late 20s, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have 3 guys who I think – we kind of highlighted the same 3 players. You want to start us off on those?
Yeah, defensive back, cornerback, boundary cornerback, Marquise Robinson, who you were in favor of protecting earlier on in the season, so he made it all the way through, so that's a good sign. Outside linebacker, Kamon Rucker, who some people really liked what he was showing in the preseason, and fullback Lucas Scott. All 3, I think, could be in camp battles this coming training camp. It's interesting that, look, it's a whole new regime. I mean, we've been living in the John Harbaugh-influenced state of mind for 18 years. Mm-hmm. And for all we know, a new coach will come in and want to do things very differently. So, but organizational depth across these players. So we'll see who can...
Let's hit on that for just a second, because I know we missed it kind of in the head coaching discussion. I don't think it's in the questions we have, but how much do you fear that organizational DNA in terms of how this offense has run successfully in the past will be lost with the new administration? Because you don't have Harbaugh and you probably won't have Monken either. And you might have some of the various offensive coordinators, but they may be at cross purposes anyway in terms of what they want. A receiving coach who wants more receptions for his guys or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a risk. Everything's a risk. Will Lamar not be an MVP candidate if they go away from the zone read stuff so much? Mm-hmm. I think he still can. So as far as overall organizational DNA, you still have Ozzy, you still have Eric, you still have your tenets, your BPA, your right player, right price, your proficiency at finding undrafted free agents.
Level spending.
That one I'm not positive about.
I know you don't like Steve it. Say. I like it.
No, I know you like it. But Steve, and I think we had a question. I was going to save it for that. But Steve, there was an interview, the last interview he did, and he was saying he wants to win now, and he doesn't give a damn about the next 30 years.
That was a year ago, by the way, that happened. Right. Okay, but they didn't go out and get Micah Parsons, and they didn't go out and get Max Crosby or anything like that.
Yeah, but how much of the contend every season is Steve's and how much was John's? Maybe it's going to be a little different. I think it's possible.
Boy, Steve, consider your season ticket holders very carefully. That's all I've got to say about it. We're going to leave the UFA discussion for next the next episode. It's just the house is on fire here, obviously, with Harbaugh changing hands. But we want to get to as many of the questions as we can here. And I asked Minion Hunter if he would send us a logical trail about the SB firing decisions. Could he get some interesting comments on it? I'm just going to see if I got anything from him here. It does not look like I did. So we'll go with the other Minion Hunter question. And he made a case for Bill Belichick that I think is very interesting. He says the following is, he has a mutual love for Lamar, the defensive genius. Now, that's a great combination for starters, but they reportedly offered him whatever he wants to be the defensive coordinator when he went to North Carolina. Ozzie and him are besties. Didn't really know that. Belichick fixes the defense instantly. You said defensive genius already. Okay, you don't need to oversell that. Lamar picks the offensive coordinator. I really hope he means that he's involved in the discussion in the selection of the offensive coordinator, not that he picks the offensive coordinator.
Right, and right.
Maybe you remember, I think this was before the Monken hiring, or it might have been when they were talking about some receivers that they were gonna look at. They offered to have Lamar be involved in those discussions, and I think he ended up declining. I don't think he made the time.
Well, I think he was involved in the Hollywood pick, right? And we saw that with Flacco too. Didn't Flacco earmark who was that fourth round?
Tandon Noss.
That's the one. Yeah, I mean, you should have him involved, but he shouldn't have final say so. No matter how much contract leverage he has, that's not the way to run an organization.
And that should be that final say so. It goes further than that. He can't have veto power over it either. It can't be like, I hate this guy, please don't bring him in. It has to be a consensus driven thing where Lamar has only a plurality of input on that.
Yes. Yeah. So Bill Belichick, I think the game's passed him by. You know, he didn't do too great in New England his last few years. His personnel decisions probably played a large part in that. And then he really struggled at the college level. I think the difference between college and the NFL is, as far as running the ship, has maybe never been more different between NIL and transfers. And anyway, if anybody's looking at college, Kurt Cignetti, I know some people are excited about. First, he's about Harbaugh's age. Second of all, it's just such a big jump. I'd rather avoid college guys.
The NIL component is so, so huge and time consuming in terms of what those people have to do. It's a difficult one. I'm gonna just take the other side of the cone, even though I would not go this way. I would not hire Bill Belichick. But I think if you hire Bill Belichick, it's because you have another guy you think might be a year or two away. So maybe they thought Shula was the guy. Well, bring in Shula to be the DC with the understanding that in 2 years you get to be head coach, kind of thing. If you want to do that, I'm okay with it. I don't generally think those things will work, but because they create necessary, I mean, the 73
coach and waitings.
Yeah,
the coach and waitings are tough. Even at the college level, they were tough. I've been upset with my team. So yeah,
and the Ravens had this with of course DaCosta and Ozzie for a long period of time. And I don't think that, you know, we don't really know, but those two are still getting along now. Ozzie is a remarkable, Raven for life.
He's the godfather. He was here before Steve. He was here before Eric. He's number one, you know. He was here before Ogden and everybody. And that's probably where the connection with Belichick comes from, because that's from the Cleveland connection.
That's right. He was with Baltimore in 96, right? I think Belichick was. Or at least to start the season, he was in some
capacity. They want to march Abroda because Modell.
No, not as head coach. Oh. He was in another role with the Ravens. I don't remember exactly what it was in 96. Yeah. He's in the media guide that year, I think, anyway. Let's put it that
interesting.
Way.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. I mean, great coach, but, you know, he's just too old at this point.
Moving on with the questions here. Haas Bonaventure. And this is a Reddit question. Hey, Reddit people, really, really appreciate you. Want to get more questions from over there. And I'll try and find a better way for you to hashtag film study mailbag. I know some people have been putting it in posts and whatnot. I probably could search for it on r/Ravens. But if you send it to me in an email at filmstudy21@verizon.net. That might be the best way to make sure I get it in the show notes, so we're talking about it. Anyway, Haas says, knowing what we know about Henry's 2025 performance, would you have let him play out his contract on the original deal, or are you happy with the extension? It's a great question for you, Haas.
I think he had a strong enough final month of the season that I can stomach it.
Okay. I'm at the same point, but probably about 20 points higher on the 100 point scale. So you're probably about a 35 and I'm about a 55. He didn't have a perfect year. It was a year with a lot of missed tackles. I mean, we're really low, the second lowest of his whole career. And at some point he's going to be not good overnight, but what he did to come back and the quality of his play in that final month was at a very high level. So, that's where I am, Haas.
Okay. If I may, this is from Connor Keller-Strauss. With the new era upon us, do you think EDC will handle free agency differently than the years past? Splashy pass rusher versus cheap pass rusher, splashy O-line versus cheap O-line.
Okay. In terms of pass rush specifically, I think the Ravens have put their stake in the ground and DaCosta is still here, so I don't really expect that to change in terms of their willingness to pay or go out and trade for worse an existing pass rusher. If Myles Garrett were to come into free agency, maybe the Ravens would consider doing it. But there's no way in hell they're going to trade two number one picks to go out and pay a guy $38 to $40 million a year. So I don't see that changing. In terms of the wide receiver position, I think they've been very good about pivoting to drafting a high-value position and finding good players now where they never really had during the Ozzie era.
Yeah, I agree. I thought we had another question here about has Eric learned lessons and applied lessons? I don't quite see it at the top, but I would agree that has been, he said after, 2022, that he did not do enough at the receiver position. And ever since then he has. So I don't necessarily expect the Ravens are going to, like you said, do that, pay the Piper twice with the trade and the contract. But I do think he's going to and make sure he has more quality depth at pass rusher. There was some talk in September where they said, well, they have all these outside linebackers. Do they really need Clowney? Right. Turns out they really did. And he had a fine close to the year. So I think those type of moves will be more top of mind for Eric.
Well, and what that means is you really need to cut the fat. In two straight years, they've had a fat player who's hurt them by being inert material during the year. And Ajabo at outside linebacker this year, complete waste of a roster spot.
Yeah.
And
if you go back to Isaac too.
But Adisa Isaac's been on IR the whole year. He didn't waste a roster spot. I don't have the same problem with him. If you want to say he's part of the problem why they didn't go out and get additional players.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
That's legitimate. What I mean. Okay.
Yeah.
The previous year, the guy was Eddie Jackson. Mm-hmm. And, they projected something onto him that he clearly wasn't, and they needed to rectify it. And they were very slow to get it done, which eventually by the time they did get it done, they still won the division, but they gave up a lot of time and a lot of big wins in the process. So we got a number of additional questions. So let's keep getting to this. If you would mind, can you look up the question from Gua Shalu? I'd like to get to it, but
it's a multi-part. Right here.
Okay. Do you want to go to it right now?
Let's see. It is a multi-part and I have the second half and then I have four from Minion Hunter in between. Can I drop the second half?
Sure, drop the second half.
I hope you don't mind a second one. The second the season ends, I usually dive into draft coverage, and I know it's early, but I never seen anything like this in the 11 years I'm a football fan. I think English may be a second language. There are only two guys I see often mocked to us, and now I do recall seeing this earlier. It's Francis Maui-Goa and Peter Woods, the defensive tackle out of Clemson.
So what he's saying is basically there's an unusual amount of additional consensus around who the Ravens need, and it's at these two positions. And the Ravens do certainly need a defensive lineman, and they certainly need an offensive lineman, and these guys could certainly make sense. But I would make the argument the Ravens really, really need a cornerback now. And, the position the Ravens are in, they have Nate Wiggins and the field. They have a couple six-round picks. They have Marquise Robinson. Mm-hmm. And they have 38, Keon Martin's
a slot, though.
Yeah, and I agree. And they have two outside corners in Longer Beam and Kone, who will be coming back after their injuries in year one. The volume there is the volume by quality, as you mentioned, for the outside linebacker position earlier, is not enough for them to be happy with that. Marlon Humphrey's going to have to move or leave. Those are the two options right now. He can move to safety or he can not be on the Ravens next year, but I don't see any way they bring him back to play cornerback.
I agree. His year was not good enough, and he's been every other year kind of guy, but I don't think you can bank on that at his age now that he's going to rebound to that extent. I wouldn't make too much out of the consensus at this point. It's so early in the cycle. Yeah. Nobody knows, you know, there's so many, you know, long to go. I would also, but if you had to sell me right now, who do you want it? What position do you want at 14? I would say outside linebacker. That would be my top choice.
Okay. And I'd be fine if it's an outside linebacker. You certainly get potentially a high quality player there. And you see what it is. I also will say, don't even worry about consensus picks when you get close to the draft. If you do, you fall into groupthink mode, and that's what got us Starks
hurting
in the last one. And It's extremely frustrating, and you know, you can't even make a cogent argument about any other choice other than a consensus pick, and you feel like you have to explain yourself sometimes. Even that, I'm wrong in doing that, to feel like I have to explain myself why I like another player over Starks, but
nonsense.
Anyway, we'll continue on. Google, we appreciate your multiple questions here. We're only gonna be able to get to one today because we have a long list of questions, but I want to get more from you. You surmise correctly, Gu is from Germany, so that's why we're a hearing German fan. Shay Oren, do you think Lamar's extension contract negotiation are connected to Bisciotti's request to fire Monken? How much do you think Lamar will be involved in the hiring of the next head coach and OC? The first part, I do think they're connected. The second part, I don't think he'll be involved at all.
I think he'll be consulted as just an opinion. As far as, not that he's the consigliere, it's going to be obviously Steve's. But if Steve is trying to decide between a few guys and he says, Lamar, what scheme do you prefer? Or what do you see yourself excelling the best in? I could see that. As far as the extension, you know, that's a really interesting question to me. What kind of duration would be ideal for the extension? Because one part of me says, okay, they had an 8-year run with Lamar. They haven't gotten over the top. Now they're making a change of coach. Just give Lamar 3 more shots, 5 more shots. But I don't want to be tied into Lamar as a declining asset for the next 8 years. Necessarily, as much as I love them, right? So that to me is the interesting part of it. I do think they need to have, I do think they need to certainly explore the extension. But if worse comes to worse, and you can't find a reasonable number or reasonable terms, then sometimes I wish I'd let guys play it out.
Well, I think playing it out actually is the worst option of all. I think I think you trade him after 26. If you cannot make any kind of a deal that makes sense for both the team and Lamar, but I think 3 or 4 incremental years would be good. If they go 4, I've got no problem with it. It's a good way, excuse me, to spread the cap. If they go 3, I've got no problem with it. I think that Lamar will be good for that entire period, and I'm very, very positive on Lamar the player right now after seeing him come back and play that game against Pittsburgh. It's one of the best of his career. And he showed the legs, and the other thing, after one additional week off, leads me to believe it's not a concession to age. So that I'm very positive. Turned 29 today too, by the way.
Yep, great point. Yesterday, I think. But yeah, good point. Great point, Ken. Let's go to John Big Boot. Are there any particular scheme changes on O or D you'd like to see based on our many issues this year, now that the Ravens are starting from scratch on coaches?
I'll do the D and you do the O. For the defensive side of the ball, I'd like to stay with the three safety alignment. I want to stay with Big Nickel, and I think it makes the most out of Hamilton. I think you build your defense around that, and you do not fail to have the proper talent depth at safety. And I think one of the nice things about Marlon Humphrey is he gives you a safety slash corner, but more than that, he gives you a safety who can come down into that slot position if Hamilton is blitzing the quarterback. That is an unbelievably valuable double to have. So from that perspective, that's one of the reasons why I really do want Humphrey back at the safety spot. I think there are risks with it, you know, but I think he's a good player and he'll do well. They had a terrible year at corner this year.
That interchangeability is very exciting. Definitely agree there. I'll give you one more on D just quickly. I'd like to see more emphasis on pass defense at the expense of run defense. They put too much into run defense this year. Personnel and play call wise, the run defense was great and it didn't take them very far.
What specific change would you like to see it to that end?
More dime, less and less big, but more penetrating defensive linemen, is not two gappers. So, you know, I know they did some good things with the four nose tackles, but going forward, I'd like to see guys that can penetrate more. On offense, I'd like to find some – wait, I'm sorry, did you want to
– Well, I wanted to just comment on that. First of all, I think the you're completely correct, and I don't want four nose tackles to be the new philosophy of the team, but I think the Orr did very well turning some lemons into lemonade. Yeah. With that, so at least I was positive about that. You mentioned something else that I wanted to respond to too, and now
more dime.
Yeah. Oh, more dime. So they did do that at the end of the season, and particularly with Simpson. But I don't think Buchanan should be immune to that. I don't see Buchanan moving to Mike, and so I don't think he should. He's not so good that he can't be taken off the field for more of this second and six, second and seven dime.
I'd like to maybe even see Hamilton be the full time green dot. But that's another conversation for probably later in the offseason. Let me just go to the offense real quick, and we'll go to the next one. I'd like to see less reliance on the read option from Lamar. I think that's going to extend his career and make the team less susceptible for down periods if and when he has to miss time or is nicked up with injuries.
That's an interesting one. I think the Ravens offense runs on is misdirection. So if you're going to take the read option out, it is the single most significant misdirection component the Ravens have. It has to be replaced by something, and there's nothing like it. That's the truth of the matter. You've got major components of misdirections. We've talked about this on the show so many times, and on other shows for film study, that you probably know them by heart. But one is jet motion, or you can use motion from a tight end, as they did with Ricard in the early years of Lamar. They could go back to more pistol, by the way. Happy with pistol?
Yes.
Where Lamar's going,
because then he's not exactly, because one of the outside is not taking big hits in the middle of the field.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and it definitely takes away what Lamar does to move people around, and how Lamar's Maserati like leverage option reading is value. But I would agree with that. I think it's a reasonable change. And the other elements of misdirection they have counter plays, and they did a great job of that. Even with Keaton Mitchell's in the game, they'll pull two guards or two linemen in one direction, and Keaton Mitchell will run the other way. And that misdirection is very valuable. They have it with they have it with all the normal pulls. I prefer the power game to the zone game, or at least a higher propensity to power. And I think especially there's a lot of teams you really want to run power against. It's not the Steelers, but it is a lot of other teams you want to run power against. And they're not punishing those teams enough when they do their zone play. And part of it, they want to have better linemen, but second of all, they really need to run power when you should run power.
Very good. I'll co-sign that. Let's go on to Angelov 85, and appreciate your consistent support throughout this season. And Ken of us, do you think extensions of certain free agent players, Linderbaum, likely Washington, Mitchell, will depend on the new coach and what he wishes to do roster-wise? Also, how does extending Jenkins alter our defensive line construction? I think we already touched on that one. But the coaching staff's impact on free agents.
Okay, so I think there's elements of the coaching staff, whatever is going to be back, by the way, because we don't, is Warhop going to be back? Is the offensive coordinator going to be back? Harbaugh's not going to be back. So you almost have no one left from the coaching staff to say, I want this guy. And I think whoever is left is going to be, you know what? I like your idea, new number one. And I think they're literally going to be looking to do that. Warhop might be one guy who would speak up at his age. He's probably not too worried about getting fired. But I think that most of that is going to be decided by the appropriate person, which is Eric DaCosta. And he's going to say, does Lindy really make sense? Is likely at the right price? Can we get a good deal on Washington on a one-year prove-it deal? And on Keaton Mitchell, that's actually a really tough question, is whether or not they can come to an arrangement with him that won't be too expensive and require an RFA tender.
I agree with everything you said there. I think that as the new head coach gets a little bit more tenured, the roster will be a little bit more in his image. But as his first year, it's going to be mostly DaCosta. The one player, interestingly, that may have the most impact is Linderbaum, because if they bring in a wide zone offensive cut guy, then Linderbaum's value is probably a little bit more than it would be if they're going to more of a drop back type style.
Yeah, it's true. Any zone scheme, they're certainly going to want to have Linderbaum. Even a power scheme, it's not like Linderbaum is bad in that. It's pass blocking, which is the problem for Linderbaum. So it's really a different side of the coin. But he certainly can help you. And Linderbaum, by the way, my opinion of this, and we've talked about it a little bit, we're going to hit the UFAs in another show, but is that Linderbaum's improved his stock a lot in the last few weeks. Unfortunately, he had a bad game against the Steelers. So he finishes on a down data point for the season.
Yeah, I mentioned last show that I wanted to see what he was going to do against the Steelers, and I'm probably more down on him now than I was before.
Yeah. Okay. Well, John Big Booty had a second question, and it's also, how do you think the front office does in learning from mistakes? I remember listening to you during the past draft, worrying about the offensive and defensive line not being addressed. Turns out you were right. Yeah, I mean, defensive line in particular was something we talked about extensively before last year's draft, and it was extremely deep defensive line draft after several Spartan years of talent in that draft. And they finally, you know, the first pick they took was Peebles, right, at defensive line? Maybe the only pick they took. Yeah.
That's the only one. Yep.
Yeah.
I've been impressed by DaCosta's malleability. I don't want to dance on Harbaugh's grave, but that was something that I noticed was a contrast between the two, where DaCosta was more to say, I was wrong, I'm going to do it different next time. And so I have been impressed by that. I think he is going to reinforce the pass rush and the offensive line this year. He's not going to say, you know, they might spend early picks on guard. I wouldn't be surprised. Not the first, not with the 14th pick, but second round or third round, that type of thing. I could see that happening. And I could see him saying, loading up and saying, well, we have Adisa Isaac and, you know, a couple David Ojabo and a couple other outside backers that we're excited about, but we still want to make sure we have the stalwart guy. So I do expect him to make those changes.
Yeah. Adisa Isaac is one. He'll be coming into year four next year. It's only year three for Isaac next year, right? I've lost track, honestly.
I think that is three. I'm pretty sure it's three.
But Tavius Robinson's entering year four, and he's a guy that they may want to consider an early extension for. I think he's actually much more valuable. I know we've had a little bit of disagreement on that, but his peripheral stats are outstanding, even if his PFF scoring is not at the real top of the heap. So I think that a lot of the things he does in terms of not missing tackles, setting the edge right, and he's complementary to the other guys they have, I think he makes a lot of sense to extend. It's the right price situation, of course. But
I pay him as an early down outside backer, not as a pass rusher. That I'd be good with. So, pretty cheap, but he'd be a crucial piece, an important piece.
All right. Voss, it's been an absolute pleasure doing this show with you this year. I think for now, while the house is on fire, we want to continue with every week, but I'll talk to you about that off air. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yes, I am at Vasilis Fiamata on Twitter, X, VasilisFiamata. And I am excited about this offseason. We have two college football games on tonight and tomorrow night, so you can look at the prospects you want to pick. Then we get to watch six pro games and look at all the coordinators and see how they're faring. It was a bold decision. It was a hard decision for Steve, but I think it's reinvigorated. At least it reinvigorated me. So I'm very excited about the future of the Ravens.
Much is to be determined, that's for sure, in the next 2 weeks. And by the end of it, 2 or 3 weeks probably, and by the end of this period, a major, major foundational block will be laid one way or another, whether it's a crumbling block or a good one, as it was with Harbaugh all those years ago. But all I ask for is an open process. I really want to see inside this and not have it be a black box in terms of how this hiring process works. And Steve Bisciotti, if you or any of the Ravens people are listening to this, please, please provide something similar to the last time after the 2008 hiring of Harbaugh. I don't know who provided that, Kevin Byrne or whatever, but if the question does not come up on Tuesday at the press conference, I'll be a little bit disappointed in terms of that. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening the whole year. Thanks for your questions. Please continue to use hashtag Film Study Mailbag. I'm trying to use that as a source of these 1 to 3 minute videos. I'm still going to do about three per week. I'll probably cut back on the number during the off season, but I really appreciate what you've done. Voss, thanks again for a great season.
Thank you, Ken. Always appreciate it, my friend.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Thank you.